Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamic Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Everybody, welcome back to another edition of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. We're here now. It's been a little bit sporadic. I've been moving around trying to get on when I can. We got a lot of stuff going on these days here in the area, and it's a lot of work trying to get Alta teams together and get things. The Alta deadlines are coming up. For those of you that don't know, Alta is here in Atlanta. It's Atlanta Lawn Tennis Association, and all those deadlines are coming tonight. So we've been working quite a bit with players and things, getting them together, getting them. So that being the case, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. I'm your host, J.P. Weber, and normally we're on every Tuesday at noon, but as I said, we're adjusting. The Yellow Ball Hotline number to call in is 646-652-4856. So if you listen from week to week and something I say sparks interest in you, call in. We'd love to. Most of the time the guests that I get on here are fantastic. They love to have the exchange back and forth. And so we have the most incredible weather here right now. It's January. This time last year in Georgia, we were under several feet of snow, if I'm not mistaken. So we're doing better. We got tennis going here. If you want to download these episodes, you can download them on your iTunes podcast type of things. Let me take a commercial break, get started with the commercial break. And we come back, hopefully today, we've got a guest that's very familiar to you all. He's written about, he's written a lot of books, 7, 8, 10, 100 books. He's written a lot of books. It doesn't matter how many he's written. The one that he wrote, Total Tennis Training, I've heard more people say that that's the best book that's been written for training in tennis that there is. Coach Chuck Creasy's book, Total Tennis Training. Doesn't matter the other ones, but I'm sure he'll disagree with me on that. But the one that he wrote is like the Bible of tennis, for tennis coaches, so, and players and people such as that. So we're going to take a break. We'll come right back, and we'll be on the air for a little while tonight talking a little tennis with Coach Chuck Creasy. Be right back.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net, tennisdynamics.net.
Hey, come join us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center for the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tennis Tournaments. This is J.P. Weber, and the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments are great opportunities for your kids to get super match play. Match play, lunch, and a chance to earn prizes, all sponsored by the Bryan Brothers Foundation, are all part of these great events. For more information, call 770-919-8602 or find us on Facebook. To register, go to tennisdynamics.net. Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com. That's the Bryan Brothers there, one of their deals. You know, I was on the phone earlier today. I'm going to see if I can bring some of this up with Coach when I get him on the air here. But I was on the phone with a buddy of mine and talking about how exceptional those two boys were. And it's hard, you know, it might be hard to ever really even consider some of the stuff that they did as being an example of the way to go, because they were rare, two rare guys. All right, let me see if I can get Coach on the air. Coach Creasy, are you with us? Hello.
Hello, Jay.
You're there.
I'm here.
All right, so I got to tell you something. You came through here. You came through like a hurricane again with your team. You brought in last year. You came in with the Citadel team, and I saw you down at Georgia Tech playing, and it was sort of a Citadel team. You know, almost like an old team. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, bash your team or anything, but this year you came in. And it was a different feel to it. They walked a little taller, a little stronger. My son, he saw the guys get. He said, "Daddy, they look like a real tennis team. That you're starting to pull things together down there at the Citadel."
Well, you know, the Citadel pulls things together. It is a amazing place. It's a coaching paradise because you don't have to worry about player self-sabotaging. You don't have to worry about the keg parties on a Thursday night football night. You don't have to worry about guys hungover on Saturday. And with tennis players, with highly skilled people, I don't care whether they're musicians or tennis players or quarterback on the football team. The problem, and anybody that's a coach knows this, there is a terrible, terrible phenomena called self-sabotage that people get scared of their own talent a lot, JP. They and this is a hard thing to understand, but your talent is, I've told several youngsters who are highly talented before that when the good Lord has given you talent, it's like being given you've got this Hope Diamond-like, perhaps, and this treasure that you carry around and you have to carry it around with you. And everybody sees it and you see it and you have to carry it out in front of you. And you'd like to put it somewhere where you don't have to deal with it, or you could put it in a bank or put it somewhere where you don't have to live up to the expectations of taking care of it. And the tragedy with people who are highly talented is that they often do not want the responsibility of living up to what is all expected for them to do with it. And, you know, and it is really a responsibility. So the point is at the Citadel, it's a fantastic thing because they basically do old school training for every youngster, a young man, young woman that comes in there. They break you down and then build you up, and it's masterful the way they do it. They've been doing it since 1842. It's 172 years, and it's a beautiful thing to watch as you see it develop. Yeah, it's very, very hard on the kids as they start out, and they go through the process of being what they call a knob. I think at some of the military academies they call them different names, but they're called knobs when they come in as freshmen. And they are required to go, everybody is the same. They shave their heads, they go through the process, and people say, well, you know, why in the world would they want to do this? But what happens is little by little they gain confidence, and little by little they get more responsibility, and little by little they grow into the role, and little by little they earn, they're not given, but they earn leadership responsibilities, either by the time that they put in or by the achievements they have. And kids find a great sense of security in knowing that there are marked rites of passage that they must go through in order to earn their way. This is the way we used to do it many years ago. It reminds me of my early days of coaching. You could break kids down and build them up. And to quote my good friend Dennis Emery at one, about the early 90s, he said, sadly, when they took away all of the practice time that we were allowed, they started top-down managing, saying you could only practice 20 hours a week, and you could only do this, you could only do that, and here are the regulations, and here are the parameters. He said, sadly, we can't break kids down and build them up anymore. You just have to pile on or try to build on whatever foundation they have. And then sadly, as well, kids have very poor foundations for the most part now, where they've been given so many things and their foundations are weak and they're not grounded and they look good, but they collapse when the responsibility becomes too great. So this is a coaching paradise. I love it. The kids are compliant to an extent where they're ready for commitments and then inspired enthusiasm, and then they get locked in at even a higher level. So thank you for the compliment, but believe me, it's I might have something to do with it, but the team, what they do is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Well, now you and I, okay, you bring up something that you and I have talked about quite a bit, and let me catch, I've been out on the court, and I'm got a little bit of a dry throat. You and I have gone around about this a little bit, and I suppose our radio shows are a little bit about fighting this and weight. Look, I every time I see another country in the world and we're out there helping them with our men and we send our men over there and they die in battles to help other countries, but then our own battles, you know, here in the beginnings of our country, we fought, we wanted to get rid of tyranny and we didn't want, and you mentioned tyranny there and you mentioned sort of, you know, a little bit of what you were talking about, there's a lack of freedom. And last week, you know, Jack Sharp ended my show and he said, all we need is the freedom to do what we're doing. But here's the thing. A lot of people won't speak up. They get a little bit nervous about, you know, you talk about not speaking up. I talked to Bill Wright today. Let's talk about so you see what I'm talking about there, you know, speaking up and fighting against it, not having shackles on you, right?
Well, I
called Bill Wright today, and we were on the phone talking, and I said, well, if you've been watching college tennis, Bill Wright's a retired coach at university. He said, well, I went out to the school, and I got the day wrong. But it was, he said to me, it wasn't like they really wanted me to know the day anyway. They're sort of hiding it. They call it these hidden duels, but they're not public. All this stuff about, No, listen. All this stuff about wanting television and they want exposure and all and how important it is, and they don't publicize it. So Bill goes out there, he gets the wrong day. He shows up on Sunday. They played on Saturday. So he goes to the players. He said, well, how did y'all do? And he looked at him and he said, we're not sure. We don't, you know, did y'all win? He said, well, we're not sure. The format was kind of different. You know, we don't know. And none of them I got letters from Wayne Bryan. People don't like it. So, Coach, when we don't like something, we got to speak up, don't we? What's going on here? Talk about this.
Well, I think you have two or three questions there you're asking me, JP.
I want to hear you
expand
on it.
Well, there's a lot going on here, but let me say that it is a sign of the times. One of the sad things, I went to a high school basketball game Friday night for the first time in about 25 years. Growing up in Indiana, basketball was a sport I loved, and I lived that Hoosiers dream. And, oh, my golly, the excitement, the passion of a Friday night, and just the thrill, I was eager to go, and I went to this small town in South Carolina. And so I got there with my friend, and I got my popcorn, and I walked in, and I'm all excited. I'm going, wow, this is going to be fun to watch a high school basketball game. And these kids lay it on the line. I walked in, and JP, it was pathetic. I walked in, and there were probably 200 to 250 kids there, total people. People were sitting there on their cell phones, and the lack of passion was so obvious. The cheerleaders were even sitting down in the stands. The coach was trying to get fired up, but it was sort of one of those fake getting fired up. He really wasn't. The kids sitting on the bench were talking to kids, people in the stands. And I go, oh, my gosh. And the basketball was just terrible. They were running up and down the floor and no defense, no – and it was like, oh, my God, this is done. This is done. This will not survive. Now, with that, we've got a lot of that. We have a lot of apathy, and people wonder where the excitement has gone. And it's not excitement as much as passion, where the passion has gone. And passion only comes from – digging deep in somebody's heart and their soul, and where it matters enough to really, really hurt when you lose, and where it really, really means something when you win. And I lead in with that because we're not allowing kids to hurt, and we're not making things hard enough to where they're really, really exciting when they win. I keep with these participation trophies and all the Excuse me?
You're talking about high school. You got college. Is that across
the
board? You're saying we're not allowing kids? What's going on here, Coach? Is it across the board?
It's across the board. We have a lot of participation trophies, participation, everything. And I always tell people that participation does not breed excellence, but excellence will always breed participation. And also, if you continue to champion the weak, you end up weakening the real champions. So we dumb down, and we're just doing a lot of the wrong things in trying to instill passion in kids. I think you were partly referring now also to this new format. This is just a terrible thing, what's going on in tennis. In college, it really is the death sentence.
Okay. And the new format, and in my opinion, this is just me, from what I see, I see very much the markings of the USTA on this somehow, or somebody else on it, but it's a top
it is. Kind of thing. It's the USTA.
Because I think that that's a lack of freedom, that's a sign of tyranny. Tell me what's going on there.
It's
and
tennis tyranny. We could call it tennis tyranny. We could call it top-down management. We could call it overregulation. We could call it socialism, socialist tennis. But basically what's happened with the advent of computers and everything, we've empowered the wrong people. See, you've got to remember, computers allow you to do things right, but they never teach you how to do right things. So people are very much into doing, let's do it right. Do you have your research? Do you have your computer analysis on this and this and this? So please understand that you might be doing things right, but you might be doing wrong things right. Nobody likes to talk about what is right, what is wrong. They want to talk about let's do it right. And ultimately, in order to do right things, you have to do right things. In order to do right things right, you've got to do the right things wrong at times. And therefore, right things have to be defined. And what are the right things? Well, passion in sports. You've got to honor our game. I mean, isn't that a fundamental principle, is to honor our game? If we don't honor the game, it will not honor us. We are squeezing it dry We are squeezing everything out of it in trying to please, you know, ourselves and in trying to benefit ourselves. Kids want rankings. Parents want scholarships for their kids. Coaches want more wins. People want to make a profit. You know, the manufacturers want to make a profit. But all these things, none of them are about honoring the game. They're about trying to get the game to honor us. So it's very, very sad that it's an ideology that will fail. And the latest this ITA action that they're doing, which is USTA driven, it will fail. It will hurt tennis. So why do people not speak out? So I think that was one of your questions too. But go ahead. What was your?
And you're going to it, but okay. So coach, it's going along fine. The first weekend play, Georgia beat Georgia Tech. You had the duels everywhere. You're going all around. It's going along fine. Nobody's, you know, it kind of like sheep or lemmings to the sea or whatever.
Well,
they're going along fine. But to me, I feel like there's something wrong. Is what I'm feeling that's wrong? Is that what you're saying there? Is it that what I feel is wrong is why it's not honoring the game? Because I tell you, when it gets down to the juniors and we're playing one set of doubles or whatever we're doing and no ad scoring, and when they send it down, because they're going to – my fear is they will send all of this down. And when they do, I think there's a lot to worry about.
I think probably ought to describe what's transpired here for anybody listening out there. And I'd like to go back and tell you about the seven things that the ITA has done that is just awful, just is bullyish, which is very arrogant, which is beyond belief that they have force-fed all of this. You know, now it is USTA driven because I've heard so many things about where this is coming from. The USTA is so afraid of the numbers and the reduction of players that they believe college tennis, you know, is fading, and it is. We've had over 400 teams drop, so the knee-jerk reaction is from the USTA about the number of players, competitive players, that we don't have anymore, the lack of scholarships for kids that we don't have anymore from USA players, and we aren't turning out players into the professional ranks. College is absolutely not a stepping stone for American players anymore. It's really lost so much of its training potential. So this is all a knee-jerk reaction, and they're going about it very much the wrong way. If I could, I'd like to back up and just say that most of this movement stemmed from 2012 at the NCAA tournament. It had 16 men's and 16 women's team there, JP, and it was a mess, because with 32 teams there, and then they got some rain. They played late into the night, and some of the apparently the officials came away saying, "Wow, that, you know, that format is sort of a mess. Teams starting late at night and everything." And what didn't have to do with the format, had to do with they just had to have their way in pushing forward and having men and women together. By the way, the men and women together vote was, but it was never there. The ITA had a vote in about 2005, and it actually was 51 against and only 2-4 combining it from the men's side, but they pushed it forward anyway. So having that many teams together was, first of all, was a mess. Secondly, when it did rain and they had a mess, a couple of the officials jumped on this and said, "Hey, this is this is a good time to prove that the format is wrong, and it's the scoring format." So in 2012, they tried to push forward something that it was met with a petition on change.org by a couple players up in the state of Michigan 10,000 signatures against changing the format. So instead of saying, wow, okay, we better not change this, let's not do this, they morphed their approach and came back in 2013 at the ITA convention. I drove 9 hours down to the convention, sat through 5 hours of discussion about this, and in the end, they said, we've got to try something. So they put two different formats up on the board. One was just abbreviating the length of the sets for doubles, six-game set, but doing regular scoring. The other was to go back to no-ad scoring, which bombed in the 80s. And once the game got so fast, people really picked up on why no-ad was bad. A net cord, I don't need to talk about that now, but the vote was 21-19 to go with regular scoring. The committee went back in the back room, 30 people, and the head of the committee said, look, that's not a mandate, 21-19. And instead of taking one of those two, they came up with what people started mockingly call it the Bullwinkle system. It's an absurd system where you play no ad scoring, stopping the sets at 5-5 in singles, stopping the doubles at 5-5 in singles, and they force-fed all coaches to play this for 5 weeks last year. And literally, I saw, we had to play it once, and we had a doubles match last 13 minutes. It was pathetic. It just was disgusting. And so they did that, and a lot of coaches took bad losses. I mean, you had the Elon's beating Duke. You had, the Michigan's taking a lot of losses. They shouldn't. Stanford taking some losses, probably they should. And, you know, and on and on. So this, the impact and ramifications mean coaches, players lose matches they shouldn't. Coaches take losses they shouldn't have to take. And you end up, it's jobs are on the line with this. It's just terrible. It's a bastardization of our wonderful game and our wonderful scoring system, which is the most pathetic thing. 2014, there, here we go. ITA sends out a poll because there's so much pushback. 81% of the kids say, no, we want to play regular. 1,342 of the men, Mitchell Frank from Virginia sent out a poll. 1,342 people voted that we don't want to play this abbreviated format, want to play the regular. They ignored these votes. 194 women's coaches coached wonderful, fantastic man and coach of 43 years, Lynn Loring, sent out a poll and got 194 women to sign it and say, look, if the ITA is going to do this, they need to at least have one, they need to at least have a two-thirds majority vote. The cabinet then this summer, at the end of the summer, said, look, we got so much pushback, let's table this. And this is the pathetic thing. After they tabled it, the executive director of the ITA sent out 3 letters in 8 days saying, look, even though they've tabled this, you have to play, you've got to play your no-ad system for the tournament. So coaches buckled and got scared. Now, with all this, remember this fact. The ITA is a coaches organization. You have to join. You have to pay $500 to join this coaches organization. It only services those people that pay $500. There's many, many, many coaches that don't join this. They have pushed themselves, or they've sort of gotten into a position where everybody thinks that they are the ruling class of college tennis. But you have to pay money to join. It's like a union that bullies and pushes their way around. And basically 30 people are making all the shots, calling all the shots.
It's an awful
thing. So that's the background on the thing.
Go ahead. If it is such as you say, if it's these 30 people and they're not maniacal,
They're good guys, I guess, I suppose, right? They're good guys, I suppose. Like, I don't know if that's a compliment or not these days. But they are, they somehow have gotten in positions of power. But how do you fling off this, if it is these 30 guys, it is a cabal, or a group of, how do you get out from under this? I mean, it seems like most, you know, people don't want to upset the apple cart.
Well,
they don't want to...
JP, leadership training 101 teaches you there's three kinds of leadership. Leadership by example, where people follow by choice. There's leadership by influence or something. I forget what the term is. But then there's coercive leadership, which is the kind of leadership that is done by, you know, communism, what happened in World War II and some of the dictator places. But it is top-down management, absolute mandating leadership. And what Jack Sharp said last week is exactly the what he said. He said, I think you asked him at the end of the show, what do we really need? He says, we need freedom. Freedom. We need freedom. Just leave people alone. This country is special. The talent is special. The coaches are all uniquely brilliant in their own ways. The kids are hungry to go out and do it. But the minute you say you have to do something, anybody within this sport especially, this sport breeds entrepreneurs. This sport, you do not succeed in this sport if you are a cookie-cutter, machine-like copycat of anybody. You have to be unique to be this. This sport starts with your unique soul, and you play it from the inside out. It mechanically, it might look the same. But every player is unique. If you watch the beautiful thing about tennis, every player is unique. And if you, in the minute that people start mandating down and force feeding, then greatness will not occur. And and I think that Jack Sharp was right on. We need to preach freedom, 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 freedom. Our First Amendment rights. And all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing. You know, and that's Edmund Burke's statement.
Over the weekend, they had an interview where they interviewed Ditka, Mike Ditka. Now, Ditka loves football the way you love tennis. You know, you're kind of a Ditka kind of guy. You're out there. You hardly sleep. You sleep barely. You're up thinking about the game. You hate losses. You take them hard. You know, tennis is a passion for you. You've always been in it. You know, you're always going to be in it probably until you pass away. You're going to be there. You'll have a racket in your hand. Dicka's got football here. So the guy is interviewing Ditka, and the guy says to Dick, he says, would you have your son play football? And he said, no way. Not the way that things are happening in football. Now, I've heard you before, you know. Yeah, you're a little bit the same way. I mean, you guys that have all this passion for it, you also, something about it bothers you the way the game's hitting, doesn't it? I mean, if I ask you that question today, would you say, yeah, tennis is a great sport for the kids to get into?
Well, you know, it's the best of all sports. It's because it's played from the soul, from your heart. Now, when you make it mechanical and when you play for only rankings or what you can get out of it and you use it for your own first, it becomes less of a passionate sport. But let's take music, okay? And, you know, the other night when I went to that basketball game, I told my friends, I said, I didn't want to watch basketball. I want to watch passionate kids participating and doing their best and giving their best. I went to a Little League baseball game this summer to watch my son, who was 9 years old, playing Little League baseball. And I saw a lot of passion in those little kids playing baseball and the parents in the stands screaming and everything. And then the same day, I had to meet a good friend over at Hilton Head and watch a tournament, JP. And it was a 14 and under national, one of those, it's one of the, I don't know what it was called. But it was one of those nationals they put together. Now they got so many of them, it dumbs down the impact of having them. And it was pathetic. Not the play, not the level that the kids were skilled, but the lack of heart, the lack of just pure passion. Now, there's a lot of things we're doing to kill off the passion. I mean, the referees are running around saying, oh, don't we have a bunch of nice kids? The referees will be happy that we're making a bunch of nice kids. But, you know, there's no zeal or love for the, you know, zeal for the task, a deeper sense of passion. And I'm looking for passion these days at this stage in my life, what keeps me in tennis. And what I think Ditka was saying was that, you know, you're looking for passion. NBA basketball is pathetic. I mean, think about this. The skill sets or the athleticism is great. The skill is not very good. I mean, it's just you don't see the, you know, it's, and but the lack of passion is what is pathetic. And in the old days, you know, we used to go out and watch a tennis match. It was an exhibition just because we would, if they, somebody put on an exhibition. I remember one time as a young boy, I got to go see, Arthur Ashe was playing, who was he playing? Who was the player from Puerto Rico was so good back in the early days?
Charlie Passarell?
Charlie Passarell, yeah. And we went and watched my buddy and I took a bus out to the other side of town, and we're so excited to get out there. And it was sort of fun to watch these guys hit their shots and everything. But I remember saying to my buddy, yeah, but it was, you know, it wasn't quite the same as getting to watch a tournament, was it? He said, yeah, we got to see all the shots, but if you ever seen exhibition tennis, it's just, there's nothing to it. It's like world team tennis. It's just, there's nothing to it. There's a lack of passion. Now, this is what's going to happen to college tennis with this Bullwinkle system, this abbreviated bastardization of our scoring system, is that the lack of passion. And they try to say, oh, it's exciting. Well, that's a pathetic statement. It's the most boring thing in the world to watch a set go 13 minutes and be done and people not know what happened. It's the most boring thing. What we need is the drama, the scoring system. Our scoring system is so beautiful. It's based on threes. If you don't win the first point of the game, you must win three in a row or four out of five every game. If you don't learn how to win 3 points in a row, you never learn how to master the sport. And nobody ever learns, pardon me, nobody masters the sport ever, but you don't learn how to win at this sport. But the other things about it, JP, is the scoring system is what? The drama. If anybody saw Kudla last night on, you know, quite interested in Dennis Kudla. By the way, the great Frank Salazar, one of the greatest coaches in America, trained Dennis Kudla, as well as Beatriz Capra, as well as Junior Orr, as well as in so many players. He's bringing so many players along. But we were watching Dennis, my assistant and I were watching in the drama of him trying to close out that match, and then first you have it, then you don't. And we were saying, wouldn't this be pathetic if this was no ad? Pathetic! You know, why? I mean, how these people, anybody could think that no ad scoring should be used. It's just mind-boggling. Do they not care about the sport? Do they not respect the sport? Do they not honor the sport? Do they not see the depth of this chess match that we call tennis? They're playing. You play checkers when you play no ad. You're not playing chess. So it's just mind boggling. But JP, it's passion. We all should be seeking passion, things that bring passion to the surface in our kids. You know, yeah, kids get mad. Yeah, kids get happy. Yeah, kids get sad. Kids have to cry. But you need things that touch the heart. You know, and
all right, let me take a quick break here. Let me take a commercial break. We're going to come back. I got a couple of callers here. Hopefully they'll come on. And then I've got about four other times. I'd like to try and get through with you because I want to ask you. We'll come right back.
Okay.
We're only here with Coach Creasy.
Thanks.
The number to call in is 646-652-48, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is. And boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered-down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time. Here on the Yellow Ball Network.
I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility. Windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards. You can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
All right, Coach, so this time of the year, we've got a lot of kids going. I sometimes think that for a kid, you know, they're around their peers. This is their first time. They're getting ready to try out to make their high school team. And some schools still actually cut. Now, or they'll make the standards up. A lot of them keep every single player. But the kids, the pimples start popping out on their faces. They're a little bit ornery with their moms and dads. They're, you know, they're nervous. You know, they hardly can study. This is the first time. I think it's you know, at college, you know, it's a little bit different from them. They're a little bit older. They can handle a little bit more. What advice would you give to those kids or the parents of the kids out there or the What's your observation? Do you see it the same way I do? Is it pressure packed like I think it is?
Yeah, it's beautiful thing. We all can remember getting cut from in the old days, getting cut from a high school basketball team or something, and it's a very important thing. Today I had to discipline a couple youngsters who weren't quite working as hard as they needed to, even at you know, the college level, and basically, I had to say, we're not lowering the bar. This isn't, it's not a situation where we lower the bar and just allow participation here. And when you cut kids, they have to decide that I need to get better and get over the bar, or I need to change what I'm doing. So, you know, it's very important, but with that brings excitement, brings anxiety, brings nervousness, brings pressure. And all those things really test a kid to see how much they love the sport, but it just is a whole different realm for them. And I agree with you completely that, you know, when kids go out for high school sports, it really is a litmus test of how much they care about something if you have a cutting process. I'm completely against the no-cut process of just letting everybody play. Again, participation does not breed excellence, but excellence breeds participation. That being said, I don't cut players at my school, but I set standards of training where they basically cut themselves and quit. And if you do this work, you get to stay. If you don't do this work, you know, go do something else. So
you've always done it that
you're,
way.
You're right on.
Did you ever cut
Excuse
it close?
Me?
You've always done it that way. Did you ever cut it close?
I always did it. My first 18 years at Clemson, I never cut a player, but I had probably 150 quit. I used to have 30, 40 kids try out and I'd say, meet me at the track for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks. I didn't tell them how long, at 5:45 in the morning, and we'd run. And that means the good players, everybody I recruit, everybody had to meet, and the kids, I tried to call it Tiger Pride Week during that time, but they called it Morning Madness. And the kids would quit. And then the ones that stayed and were around at the end, and the bond that formed, you could give them a T-shirt at the end or something like that. And you would see more pride in the camaraderie. Kids would be crying at the end of that, JP, just because they made it through. And it's a beautiful thing. I see that all the time at the Citadel, to see kids when they get through things, and they do it honorably, and they do it they just out of their own toughness. I mean, it's very, very emotional, and it's a fantastic thing to see.
It's not a macho thing. It's not you're trying to hurt them or do anything. It's not a macho thing.
No. That's nothing to do with it. You set a bar. You set a standard, and you have to know what standard you're setting. I've done it for so many years, but I also was – I used to run myself years ago, and I know the times, and I know what's supposed to happen, and I know you have to set the standards. And in anything you set, you basically set standards that tell kids, look, get over this bar, but absolutely do not lower the bar and let kids over, because what you do when you dumb down the standards, again, if you champion the weak, you end up weakening the real champions. So the tragedy is that, you know what they did at Clemson and most of the universities, and they, oh, my golly, they cut the number that we could keep on the team. They cut it because of proportionality, and what really ran me off a lot of it was twice they made me cut one of the top players in the state, who was a walk-on from the state of South Carolina, a walk-on. They made me cut him because it was the 11th person on the team, and then the women couldn't have, you know, they didn't have more people, so I couldn't have more people, and it was preposterous. I said, because women won't play, men can't play. I could have had 15 walk-ons, but this is a tragedy. And in other words, opportunities to compete is not the same as bodies in the seat, if you understand what I mean. I told my athletic director, well, give women 20 opportunities, and then we can have 20 players. And if you can't fill 20 places, well, then that's on them. But don't say we can't compete because women won't play without a scholarship. Women won't walk on.
Great point.
It was
great way of looking at it. Let me pick up something else with you. Okay.
Wait a minute. Let me make one finish that.
All right, go ahead.
Most of those women were foreign women, by the way, as well. So they weren't even Americans. It was all the scholarships going to foreign women. So my South Carolina kids, your South Carolina kids can't walk on because they don't even give them a spot to play, and it is tough. That you know, they're just
it's a whole
wrong.
Different phenomenon with women's tennis. They're not
required
to do the walk on stuff. They're not gonna hang out like a scrub. You know. I remember back in the day when you had three teams. You had your varsity. You had your white team. You had your work team.
I called it orange team, white team, and work team. But listen, let me explain something. My varsity was my top 10 guys, and then I had a 14 or 15 guys training like crazy to be the top two on the JV squad. The top two every week made the varsity, and I'd push out the top two of the varsity guys who weren't working hard enough. So what that did is you had a player like a Kent Kinnear or Richard Matuszewski, many, many players who had to start like on the JV squad, and they ended up top 100 in the world, and they started out on the JV squad at a college team. But the way you would do it, I realized in training these extra kids that I had a recruiting base. If one of those guys got better, every year, then I only had to recruit one other player from around the country or something, and I got out to have two good recruits. So basically, I love to train players. I love training players. I love to help kids get better. So, you know, that was a great, great thing to be able to have that. People ask me about my favorite day in college ever. Favorite day ever was on our front courts. We were playing Virginia, six matches at once. On the middle courts, we were playing Ohio University. And on the very back courts, we were playing Principia Junior College from California. We were playing three dual matches, 18 matches going at once. And I said, we are training these young men. And the competition was intense. And that was my favorite day ever.
All right, let me change gears with you here. I mentioned earlier, we're going to switch to junior development a little bit, or a little bit earlier in the development, not college, but I mentioned earlier how much I think of your book and how much a lot of other people think of your book. There's another book out there I really like, Raising Your Child to Be a Champion in Athletics, Arts, and Academics by Wayne Bryan. And in that book, Wayne talks about get your kid out, get him to pro matches, get him to this, get him to that, blah, 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 exposing to everything you possibly can. And you and I've discussed this, and you have a theory, an idea. You say keep the fog on the mountain. Actually, it might be in conflict with what Wayne is saying. Help me, talk to me a little bit about this from your perspective with the fog.
I think Wayne's right, and I think I'm right, and you've got to know your youngster. But let me explain this. The saying I always say to coaches is you must be very smart about keeping fog on top of the mountain until the kids are too high up to turn back. In other words, what happens with youngsters today is they have so much information on their internet and their computers that when you say, let's take on this challenge, they size things up. They go to a tournament. They know every ranking. They look it up on the internet. They look up, they Google everything. And the kids already see the obstacles before they start climbing that mountain. So, like, they're trying to be great at tennis, and if you take them to only professional tournaments, that's nice, but then what happens is a lot of kids say, whoa, that's a little bit too much for me. I look back to my father was very wise, and what he used to do when I was a seventh or eighth grader, I can remember him taking me to high school games, and I would watch and I idolize those high school players. But there was a thing in the back of my head was saying, you know what, I can do that. I can do that. And I remember the summer before I went to high school, he took me to the local parochial school state championships, and I saw my competition. And I said, you know what, I can play with these kids. I can do this. And it gave me a lot of confidence. Now, compare that to today, if we just take kids to, I grew up in Indiana, the Indiana Pacers games, or something, a lot of times kids will go, whoa, that's pro stuff, and hey, that's entertaining, but that's too far out there for me. Every goal starts with a step at a time. I think parents, Wayne's right, you take them, you show them a little bit, but then I think also Wayne did a masterful job. Boy, has anybody ever done a better job of parenting two champions? I've never seen it done better. And all through history, I don't know if there's ever been as good a job done. But what he did, I'm sure he exposed those young men, his boys, to the next level as well. And then he would give them the bait and taking them to a Davis Cup. And I remember a story where Ricky Leach walked by the Twins and said, hey, Twins, I know you. You guys will play here one day. And something like that. And, you know, these are beautiful stories, but it all starts with the kids dreaming, but the kids should never size up how hard things are. You know, if you size up how hard any job is, parenting, coaching, teaching, any job, being a doctor, any job, if you knew how hard it is before you start, a lot of people won't take the journey. Unless the passion is incredibly great. And Wayne had a way of, those kids had passion for the tennis. He had a way of baiting them long enough where those kids, I wanted to do it so badly, and that passion drove them through the hard times. So I think, to answer your question, JP, I think both are right, that you have to know your child, and you need to know how to show them the next step. And you can show them the top of the mountain, but don't bury their dreams. Don't show them too much, and let them ever size up. You've got to go after it regardless.
A lot of our, I've got another issue, and I want to make sure I get on a couple of callers here. We've got several people actually. It lit up all the way down to the bottom, Coach. You got quite a few people listening in tonight. I've got a question for you. The issue of developing a player. Now, in my career, I've had this happen several times. There's one player in particular that I was very close to and I enjoyed. And I grew up knowing tennis and playing tennis very differently from the way that he played it. And when I was introduced to him and in a position to work with him, at that time, maybe I was lucky from having the opportunity to be sort of, I got in an apprentice position with a guy named Dean Mathias up in North Carolina. And I was a little bit.
I remember him from Rollins. He was at Rollins in the early 70s.
He went to Wake Forest, actually.
He went to Wake Forest, I think he grew up in Florida, then went to Wake Forest. That's right. He played at Wake for Jim Leighton back in the early 70s.
So you get a player, a kid, and a lot of this happens in recruiting kids. You know, you'll get a kid and they'll move from one coach to another. And a coach will take a 15 or 16-year-old kid and totally revamp their game just in order. Sometimes I think it's almost like a dog peeing on its territory. You know, they want to leave their mark. And a lot of young coaches will do that. I've seen that happen more than once. I know that that happened just recently to a player you guys had up College Park. You know, another guy got a hold of him, and by golly, he was going to put his mark on him, and he did. And I don't think it turns out so good. You're talking to young coaches; they're getting their hands on players. How do they go about that? And what's the best thing for them to do?
Well, okay, a couple. I want to make this sort of each tennis player. If you play from the inside out, they all develop their tendencies naturally from the inside out, and they have their own signature on how they play. That's the beautiful thing about this game. Now, there are similarities that need to be taught. You know, I really believe now the game is so fast. I mechanically teach fundamentals of footwork and recovery steps so that the kids look clone-like almost with their movement. It has to be that way because ball striking has overcome movement, and if you don't have perfect footwork and perfect recovery step, it's methodical and it has to be mechanical. Upper body, I do kinesthetically. I believe upper body kids need to have freedom to develop their own feel. It's like a paintbrush. Every kid. Now, I think we overteach the upper body, underteach the legs. I believe we should overteach the legs and underteach the upper body. But there are similarities, the grips, the loading, and those things. But it's beautiful when you see a Santoro. It's beautiful. I always wonder where the Harold Solomons are at, where the Eddie Gibbses are at. Where are the uniqueness? Where we need to skip Fosberries to come along in tennis again and say, whoa, we need somebody out of the box to come along and win, and people go, whoa, 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 wait a minute, everything doesn't need to be cookie cutter. I really hate the mandate of anything like it's got to be this way, it's got to be this way, except there are similarities. Like defense and basketball, there are similarities here with your drop steps and things that have to be done. But footwork, I think, is non-compromising. Upper body, though, is kinesthetic. So when people change somebody, you're talking about a couple of coaches. I know so many players have been messed up. People try to put their own fingerprints on there. I have never changed. I don't change ground strokes after a certain age. When in college, I would let ground strokes go. I feel like that's your signature. But I work like crazy on perfecting volleys. I think volleys, there's lots of similarities in mechanics. Footwork, I think I work, overwork footwork to where it's automatic. Serves are similarities, but when somebody's got a natural service toss, I don't mess with it. I'll work on mechanics of service toss. I'll work, but ground strokes, I let them be pretty much by the time they get to college. I think that when they're young, the kids get they develop their own styles, then they break out, and they play from the inside out. I asked a group of pros one time, so how do you teach a kid? Do you do all the mechanics right here with your racket and then and then deliver a good stroke? Or do you tell the kid, look, I want you to do this with the ball and do hit it over there? And basically it's both. It's outside in and inside out, if you get what I'm talking about. So
yes,
it is a part mechanics and part kinesthetic perception or kinesthetic awareness there. And but anytime we take somebody and we just try to make them play like a robot, like you have to be this kind of player, boy, when they compete, they got to compete from the inside out. They got to feel the game. It's like a good dancer. You can show them the footsteps all you want, but buddy, they better feel the music from the inside, or a musician better feel it from the inside and let it radiate out. That's the way the best players are developed.
Let me see if I can get a caller on here. Caller at 269. Is this Coach Walker?
Hey, how are you, Coach?
Tom Walker.
Good. Hey, Tom. Hey, man.
Hey, it's nice to hear from you. I just wanted to tell you that I really enjoy listening to you. I was enjoying that for a while. And the comment, I really kind of enjoyed listening, just make a couple points. One, I keep hearing how everybody is saying junior tennis is down. The number of players are lessened and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of find that ironic because in my area, we've never had so many junior players. Now, that goes to programs, that goes to level of excitement and motivation of what you're talking about. But I would tell you that it's troubling. You were talking about being in a national selection tournament recently. And, you know, our kids are noticing that. They're going to events. They're not putting draw sheets even up. These are supposed to be the highest level events we have in the country. They're no longer the next step or the next hurdle or the pathway that you're talking about. There's no excitement, no passion going to these because the organizing body is not making them important. They're not making the kids feel like it's an important task.
Can I say something there real quick before Coach Creasy goes on? You know, they'll give you the tournament. You know, Don Dickinson ran that Copper Bowl for years out there in Arizona, and then with the flip of a switch or whatever, they took it away from him. I got tournaments here. You invest a lot. You put the draw sheets up. Maybe you build a board or something like this. You may want to do it for that tournament, but at any given time, they can just take it away from you, gone. And that's not the way it felt a long time ago. And these guys are running these tournaments. And they get that, you know, it's probably a fake national that you went to, Coach Creasy. I call them fake nationals.
Yeah, fake national. That's right.
And the entry fee is about $120, and they give you a dollar towel as a token.
Yep.
And then, like Tom, you say,
I'll top you on that. The winter national championships used to be a number of years ago, really nice little tournament. Lots of college coaches going to watch kids play. I was down there this year. Again, the sights, there's nothing wrong with the sights. There's no USTA presence. The draw sheets weren't up for the first day and a half. They weren't being updated. There's no passion in it. Where are the T-shirts? Where are the things to make these kids? You talk about these kids want to go into these events and feel like they've achieved something. They've achieved something in their local level and their sectional level to get there. And now that they're there, they're made to feel that it's unimportant. And so they come home and where they want nothing more than the pride of having made it that far, and we're discounting what that achievement is. And that's a problem. We have kids more excited about being part of our program than going to the national tournaments. That's a problem. So I really enjoyed listening to Coach talk about his program at Clemson and Morning Madness, even as a coach ages ago when I was in Florida. That was legendary. If you made it through Morning Madness, it was a badge of honor. It used to be a badge of honor to get to certain tournaments, even if you weren't the best player. You've worked your way through it, you've achieved something, and now all of a sudden it's gone. And you're calling these tournaments fake nationals. Some of them are. That we have regional national events at the same time as the national selection events, we have so many spots going on that the draws are not filling. That's disturbing. And
what
we've got a
committee, Coach. Are you on it too, Tom?
No. Go ahead, Coach. You answer first, and I'll go second.
Push me off, Tom. First of all, everybody, that absolutely one of the best developers of talent year after year after year, and here's my take on it. I've got to just say this. Years ago, in years of recruiting, 35 years, we used to realize that there are about five events that you had to be at, where all the kids were at, and you needed to be there if you wanted to recruit. I mean, the National Indoors over Thanksgiving was a huge one. The Orange Bowl, maybe or maybe not, depending on how many Americans were there. But you always went to the clay courts. You always went to Kalamazoo. You might go to one of the others, two of the others. You went to your sectional, like go to the Southerns or the Westerns. So Western Open was a good one, too. Now, Tim Wilkerson was on this program, about 4 or 5 months ago, JP. And I remember his comment. He said, people play for two reasons. They play for rivalries, and they play for the heritage of a tournament. The rivalries, he made a comment that if I lost to somebody, he said it might take me a year to get ready to play that guy again, but I hated losing so much. The rivalries are what made me. I wanted to not be behind somebody. I worked. So, and then the heritage of the tournament. Now, the rivalries have been taken away, and the heritage has been taken away by the point system that USTA has pushed down. We have to dump the point system. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. Because the kids do not play for points. Parents might look at it, and it's a complete bastardization of finding out really who the best players are. I recruited a kid one time, 18 in the United States, and I, like an idiot, I paid attention to the ranking, and I'll never do that again. If you look at USTA rankings, you're crazy when you recruit somebody, because it might be a kid who just played 30 more tournaments than somebody else and got more points. We need the head-to-head battles to tell that again. But here's my big problem with the points. The points are also cutting the legs out from under the tournament directors. So let's say I'm Rex Maynard in Belton, South Carolina, who I respect so very, very much, or I was a Dan McGill in running the Cracker Land in Athens, Georgia. Or I was Don Dickinson running the Copper Bowl in Arizona, JP, I guess. And what happens, and let's say the USTA comes in and say, you know what, your tournament, you don't have enough of this or enough of that, or you were we're going to make you a level 3 national. And, people didn't play for levels or points. They wanted to win the Cracker Land. They wanted to win Belton. So if you ask some kid if they would rather be number one in the United States or win Kalamazoo, Tom, what are they going to say? They're going to say win Kalamazoo. If you ask somebody, would you rather be number one in the world or win Wimbledon, they're going to say want to win Wimbledon. So we really have failed them with this point system. And the kids are lacking passion because they don't know what they're playing for. And nobody knows what the diamonds are. And we're pushing rhinestones in front of the kids. We're paying these fake nationals and these fake L1, L6, L3. I can't keep up with it. I look at the USDA website.
Coach, I'm going to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because remember who started this whole thing. This was all started at the USTA national level. This was all started by the committees meddling in things that they shouldn't have meddled in.
Well, they
Wait a minute. The tournaments existed. The tournaments were fine. They took away tournaments from existing tournament directors, and I still remember Xena with the Easter Bowl. They wanted to take the Easter Bowl away from Xena. They gave her a choice of she was either going to run an ITF event that was going to encompass the 18s because that's what they wanted to push, or she could keep her tournament. That's what they, the choice they give her. I still remember Xena calling me and talking about it. And the point system, I don't care whether you do points or head-to-head, you can tweak either system. The ITF system, you may mention is recruiting off the USTA system. You got the same problem with the ITF system, with the international players. So I agree. I'd like to see more head-to-head. But simply going to a universal tennis ranking system in and of itself will be a disaster unless unless you require specific amounts of play dictated to other players, because the old system, the old star system, had the problem of kids not participating, getting one win and then disappearing. The reason the universal system seems to work right now is because kids are forced into playing more because of the point system. Now, if you want to talk about having limits or having minimum reps, then I agree with you. The head-to-head system will work. The problem is that the national tournaments, the major ones, the Franklin, the Peach State, the Quicksilver, all the ones that were meaningful have been stripped away and have been given nameless, faceless titles. Beyond that, the national ranking system is inconsequential because you cannot get into the clay courts, the hard courts, the Easter Bowl. You can't get into those tournaments based upon the national ranking anymore. That's been taken away. So to put the next hurdle in front of a child, which they should be moving, district, section, national, international, as what you're talking about with Wayne Bryant, which is the next hurdle in front of them, that hurdle, that whole hurdle is gone. There is no national tournament selection anymore that gets into the national championships. So we've taken away a pathway from the kids. And we've made these tournaments so bad that the kids aren't playing.
Let me ask both of y'all a question. Coach, you want to, okay, Coach, you answer him, and then I want to ask both of y'all a question.
I wanted to ask you just a quick hypothetical question. If you're up in Michigan and you have the Michigan State Championship, it's the most important tournament there. And if they could identify that, first of all, you're exactly right about giving them nameless, faceless value. That's why the point system is I don't like at all. Beside the people who run the tournaments losing their motivation because they worked their whole life to put together a tournament and then they're degraded. But Tom, let's say some kid plays 10 tournaments and he's got all the points. But then you have some kid come out of a basketball season and he plays this big state tournament and he comes all the way through the tournament. He wins that state tournament, but he's only played one tournament. The other kids played 10. Who's the state champion in your mind?
It depends. I would still say that the kid's got to play a minimum number of events. And I'm not talking, Chuck, I'm not talking about a huge number.
Well,
I'm not talking about a huge number. One's won the tournament, one's ranked number one.
You understand where I'm coming from.
There's a world of difference. Right.
You understand where I'm coming from. You understand where I'm coming from. The best player, that best player who plays one tournament and wins it in the most important tournament, let's say a kid plays three tournaments this summer, and they win. Jay Berger did that. Jay Berger played that year he won Kalamazoo. He played Florida qualifying. He won the clay. He won it. He won the clay courts. He won Kalamazoo, and he got a wild card in the Open. Now, was Jay the number one player in the country, or was he fifth? Would he have been 20 because he didn't play 10 events? Which one?
It would depend upon what the minimum number was set. Right. Okay. Well, that. And then again,
I'm not
this
talking
is
about
a this
massive
is an idea.
Number, Chuck.
Look, it's a good point. Both points are well taken. To my thinking, if
Chuck,
you got
me,
Joe Blow coming out of basketball season and he wins it all, he's the winner.
The problem here, Chuck, the problem here, Coach, is that you've got player development with their finger on the scale. And if you're going to select, if you're going to do that, you're going to have ITF players that are going to have a significantly high ranking, and they're never going to touch wings with your other top national players because they're going to they're going to opt out. They're going to play ITF events, and they're not going to play the
USTA
events.
You're talking about ducking. Kids duck events, that's wrong. That's
absolutely wrong.
You can't mandate not ducking.
That's why the star system was gone away from. Now, I don't think this should have gone away from it. It needed to be tweaked, and that's what we got to be careful that we're doing now, which is going away from tweaking it.
Let me catch you guys, and I want to ask you, okay, when we got away from the star system and the head-to-head, it killed local tournaments. I'm just going to make this comment to me. But it also, I think it was a knee-jerk reaction because I don't think it was as big of an issue as, you know, it's being brought up here right now. But I think what really mattered was that it cost a lot of money to play tennis. That's what you find out with a point system and the minimum number. So I'm curious, I'm going to let you guys back on. But, Tom, react to what I'm saying there. I mean, you know, it was a little bit overblown, wasn't it?
Well, it was overblown, but you're also making an assumption again. And again, this is why there needs to be experts like Chuck Creasy and different people on from different regions of the country. You're saying the national tournaments are hugely expensive. For the South, maybe they are. But you've got to remember, in the North, in many parts of this country, it is cheaper to go play a tournament event, actually get competition, pay $100-something to play the event, fly or drive somewhere, play the event, than it is to get court time to practice on in the winter. So it was really a failed situation to say, okay, well, let's penalize the kid that wants to go play, well, because that might be their practice time. So it's I understand where some kids are going to have more reps than others. The idea is to do a system that kind of rewards both kids, the kid that goes and works and wants to play, and then the kid, as Coach Creasy is saying, the kid that's a multi-sport athlete. There's got to be pathways and ways in for both, but not to reward a kid that's going to just duck. You've got to be very careful about that under any system that you have.
All right, let me let you have the last word on that. Coach Creasy, I got one more caller here that I'm going to try to bring on, and then we'll let it go. Is this Lawrence Roddick?
Yeah, I'm here.
Lawrence, you've been Coach Creasy's on the air with us. Tom Walker's been on with us. Have you got any observations or any comments you want to make?
No, that was a great discussion between the two of them. Just to clarify, there are national tournaments based on national ranking. The Easter Bowl coming up is based on national ranking entry as it stands now. They may change that.
Because it's an ITF event.
No, but I'm talking 12s through 16s.
Okay. What do you do if you're 18? Or you're trying to get a college scholarship?
Well, I'm just saying 12s through 16s is based on national ranking. I didn't look at 18s. I would assume it's based on ITF ranking. Right. Anyway, just that's one comment. And the USTA National Selection Tournaments are based on national rankings as well. And they went back and they mentioned some great tournaments, the Copper Bowl and Fiesta Bowl and some other events that have been taken up. I'm not sure what happened, but I mean, we were just in Arizona, and I remember spending multiple holidays in the Phoenix area and the Tucson area when it was the Fiesta Bowl and the Copper Bowl. And
yep.
What it looked like they did was they gave the 12s and 14s to Tucson and the 16s and 18s to Phoenix and the winter and called it the Winter Nationals. So, anyway, there's a lot of great debate back and forth. I would have to take Tom's side on the UTR and give it a minimum number of tournaments, and I'd have to agree with him on that. You know, Coach Creasy probably has some great arguments with the star system, but even now there are kids that don't play tournaments, and the whole USTA motive for changing everything in 2014 is to have the top players play the top players as many times as possible. And I personally agree with that. I think that I think the national selection tournaments moving forward may have some merit. I'm not going to pass judgment on it right now, but I can tell you there are some selection tournaments coming up that are just tough as nails, and the kids, the top kids, are playing the top kids. So I had some other observations, but I got taken up by their recent dialogue, but that's about it for that. But it was a great debate. It was tremendous.
Well, that's wonderful. Coach Tom, Coach Welker, I appreciate you coming on. Lawrence, you coming on. Coach Creasy, I've kept you late enough tonight. I'm sure Claire's missed you. I need to let you go. I appreciate you coming on. I'll let you have the last word.
No, this is what we need. We need these debates, these discussions. There's things that we all can agree on. We all want the USA to be we shouldn't be copying anybody. I mean, we should take ideas from other people, but by golly, we still have the best country in the world. And our juniors are doing great. We don't lose the kids until about 15. We lose them about 16, 17, 18 in there. We need to do a better job there. How about just one last idea? You know, why don't we have one in there? With whatever the USTA does, they do one thing great. It's these qualifying tournaments, wide-open qualifying tournaments for the U.S. Open. Why not do that for Kalamazoo and our Nationals? Why not have four tournaments where you tell kids, hey, you didn't make it any other way, you're not in the Nationals, take off to Omaha or take off to Atlanta here and play in this tournament. They got a 453-draw tournament there. And guess what? If you win that, you're in the main draw of Kalamazoo. So we could do things like that, too. I think we just use we need the freedom to just come up with ideas. We need Tom Walker, Lawrence Roddick. We need Wayne Bryan. We need Jack Sharp. We need USTA to have ideas. We need freedom, guys, freedom.
And ringing
on it, that's what we should be fighting for.
All right, we got to go. Let you go. Thank you, everyone, for coming on. I appreciate all the callers I didn't get to. I'm sorry. I wanted to get you on. But those guys stayed on for the longest time. So, again, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate it.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.